Blog Talk Radio.
You will not forget, for you have seen. You'll not close your eyes. They are forever opened. Some things cannot be got. They are already had. Ah, you say, but what of faith? For some it is. For some it escapes. As for me, I say, amen.
You are listening to Bigfoot, Ground Zero.
Whatever's making that noise is coming closer to me. Something just told me to turn your spotlight on. But when it got down to that corner of that meadow, it just turned around and it did. Oh!
All right, you're listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. My name is Dave. It is the end of the week, Friday. I love it. A couple of reasons. The weekend is coming up, obviously, but I love doing this program. We're going to keep doing it on Fridays at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. I met a few weeks ago a man by the name of Bobby. I'll go ahead and leave his last name out of the picture. I don't like to do that unless people don't mind. I told him I wouldn't. But if I was Bobby, I would go back and I would honestly play the lottery, because he has had Sasquatch sightings multiple times. And when I say multiple times, I mean multiple times. You got to stay tuned. On the face of it, his story is going to be unbelievable. You're going to listen, and for a while you're going to say, oh, this is great. But then as the sightings go on and on, you might start wanting to raise the BS flag. But before you do that, consider a couple of things. I don't often line up an interview and kind of preload it, but I want you to think about this as he's telling his story. These sightings, except for one, all happened within a very small radius in an area that he and his family hunted in. I believe the month was August, if memory recalls. And each of these encounters, again, happened while they were doing the same things. And I can hypothesize about a few things. I won't do it. But listen to this and get jealous, because if Bobby's telling us the truth, and I have every reason to believe that he is, well, he's taken multiple sightings away from people that would have probably had them. I say that in jest, but Bobby, thanks for your forthrightness. I appreciate you coming on, and we'll go ahead and do the interview, and then I'll get back. We've got Carl coming on. We're going to talk about infrared vision within animals and how that might work with Sasquatch, and a few ways that we might be able to actually use that against Sasquatch to actually catch Sasquatch. I know that sounds crazy, but we'll get into it. Anyway, here's the interview with Bobby, and I will see you on the back end.
All right, so we are here talking to Bobby. Bobby, thanks again for coming on the program and sharing your experiences. And I just kind of wanted to ask you a couple of things. I know you had a couple of Sasquatch sightings, definite sightings, Class A, and then recently or subsequently there was another possible sighting. And I'll get into, you know, why you might think that would be the case. I know you caught a small glimpse of something that you thought might be Sasquatch, but yeah, I mean, you've had multiple experiences. I think definitely you've hit the jackpot. I definitely think our listeners would like to know blow by blow in detail what happened. So if you don't mind, kind of walk us through, you know, the time frame, when this happened, where it was. You know, walk us up through the period of it for the first one and the second one. And I think the reason I do that is because I like the listeners to know, again, and I've said this before, that it's not like you wake up one morning and know that you're going to have this sighting that changes your view on life and the whole nine yards. So, yeah, just walk us through it, and you know me, I'll pop in if I have any questions. But, yeah, but go ahead and take it from here.
Okay. Thanks for having me on. My first encounter was July of 1976. I was 12 years old. We were up camping. My family, my aunt and uncle, and some friends. There were two campers, one motorhome, and I slept in a tent with my pup. And it was the wee hours of one of the mornings. We were a tent by a creek, and I had set my tent up near a large tree, and it just so happened that there happened to be a full moon or close to full moon that night. And in the wee hours of the morning, I heard something coming either down off the hill that we were near or down the road that was coming off the hill. You could hear the lava rock crunching, and it wasn't a deer or anything walking. It was 2 feet walking. You could hear it crunching as it walked across the road. And then it went down to the creek, and you could hear it walking on the rocks, the river rock, and you could hear the rock shifting as it walked. And when it got down to the creek, it apparently picked up two rocks and would hit them in rhythms of three. It did that three or four times, and I was petrified. My pup was asleep. It didn't even respond to it, but I was scared to death of what it was. I didn't know what it was. And then you could hear it get up and start walking across the rocks again, and it was heading for my tent. And I was in sheer panic, just frozen stiff. And the moon cast its light on the backside of my tent, and you could see about three-quarters of the way across was the big tree I was up against. And it kept walking and walking, and finally it got to the tent, and I could see from, like, chest down the shadow on my tent of it starting to walk by. It was quite large, and you could tell it was hairy and standing upright walking. And when it did that, I saw that. I screamed, and it shot straight out. And my dad came out with his gun out of the motorhome, and I made him make sure there was nothing in there before I came out and went in. I told him what it was, what I thought it was, and nobody believed me and said, no, it was a bear. But there were no prints, no nothing that we could see in the rocky ground that we were camped around, but we left that day, the next morning, to go home. That was experience number one. My second one was, at the time I didn't know what it was. It was just a sound, but it was walking. We were deer hunting. All these other stories are up deer hunting, and these are in August, mid-August.
And now, is it the same area that these sightings occurred within a few miles, or are they different?
It's probably about 150 miles between them. This first one was up in above Sonora. The place is called Eagle Meadows in California.
Sure.
It's up above Sonora. The second one was in Lassen National Forest, near Eagle Lake, by Susanville.
Okay.
And the second one, we were, it's during archery season, we were camped. This is like a half a mile from our camp. They went to the top of the hill, and the object was to walk through the brush and stuff and drive any deer down to the people waiting below. And this area we called Buck Hill because it was bucks everywhere on this hill. And we dropped up top. I was walking down. I walked through the manzanita. It's probably 6-8 feet high through there. And then I come to this grove of trees. They were probably 30-40 feet high. It was like it was an old burn area, so they were forestry department put them in, and they hadn't thinned them out yet. It was so dark in there. Really couldn't see anything. I got about 50 yards into this, and behind me I heard the Tasmanian devil talking, you know, how you kind of
okay, so let me interject right here, because I think And if I'm getting this right, was it Ron Moorhead that did the, he had the recordings of the samurai chatter?
Yeah.
Okay, now, was it similar to that or more muffled or kind of?
No, it was more muffled. It's exactly like the Tasmanian Devil.
Okay.
When you watch it on, like, the Bugs Bunny show. That that's what it was doing. It sounded like it was talking to itself. It sounded like words, but they weren't intelligible to me. And I was walking from north to south, and it was walking from east to west behind me in the manzanita. I couldn't see it, but I could follow the sound as it went across. And that, it just stuck in my mind. There's nobody else hunting up where we hunt. It's the smallest zone in the state, and nobody hunts archery season there except for my family. And there's no reason that this is like 26 miles from any town or anything. There should be nobody there on top of this hill. And I didn't even associate the sound until I started listening to the show and people playing the chattering sound and saying that they make these sounds, that I realized that's probably what it was a Bigfoot, because nothing else is going to make that sound.
Now, can I ask a question really quickly?
Sure.
About the sound. And once again, and people knowing as they're listening, they know I have a short attention span. If I don't ask the question now, I'll forget. So I apologize for that. But I have heard, when I'm hunting, I have heard bucks make very similar sounds as they're grunting and almost a vocalization.
What did you hear make that sound?
A buck. I've heard bucks
grunt.
Yeah, I've heard bucks grunt. I've seen them grunt. And on one occasion, the grunt was a little bit longer than it normally is, and it kind of sounded like that. I know you've heard bucks. If you're a hunter, you've heard them before. Was it similar to that, or was it completely different?
Completely different.
Okay. Okay. And
this
just
was
for
a
you
full,
go ahead.
This was a full conversation as it walked by, it talking to it.
And just for the people out there who are listening who are not familiar with manzanita trees, they grow very close together. They can be very difficult to get through. And sometimes if somebody can be pretty close to you, and you still can't see them within 10 or 15 feet. So I can imagine that was kind of a scary situation. How did you feel in that moment? Did you think automatically Sasquatch, or was it more like, oh, my God, I don't know what this is, I got to get out?
No, I never thought of that being up there at all. My thoughts of any animal that I had to worry about was a bear. That was my only concern up there. I didn't know. I didn't think they were up there where I deer hunted.
Yeah. And do you know of any other sightings that have been up in that area? I've not researched.
Yeah.
On. Oh, you have. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Actually, my dad had a sighting that year, the same time I heard, the same year I heard that sound.
Sure.
Him, my grandfather, it was like a quarter, half a mile from where I heard that chattering noise. They were coming back from town, and he saw something move, and he stopped, and he said it was just like the Patterson film, how it was walking away and looked back over its shoulder. He said it was exactly the same thing, except for it was going the opposite way. And he said it was walking upright, and he said it was probably six and a half feet tall. He said it was brown colored, like a white-tailed deer, that beige to buff color.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he said it exactly like the paddy field. Turned around and looked at him and kept walking. When he said, when he realized what it was, he took off, and then everybody went and looked the next day for tracks, but it was too rocky.
What were the similarities? If you look back, and I'm sure you've replayed both experiences in your head, and we can get to the third one in a few minutes, but what are the similarities between the two sightings, whether it was kind of the geographical area where you were in relation to water, cliffs, trees, whatever? Was it a specific activity you were doing? Is there any correlation you can draw between the two that you might kind of say, oh, geez, you know, I was doing this, this, and this?
The only thing I was doing was hunting, doing my normal thing. It was all the situations, or two of them, were walking downhill, which is the next one I'll get into. It's another sound, a growl. And the other ones I was sitting in a tree, and the other one was driving on the road. It was the sighting.
Okay, so the other one was walking down the road. And that was your grandfather who saw that?
My dad and my grandfather.
Okay. And so what is it like in your family? Because I've never heard anything like this. And I believe you, by the way. But it's interesting, and it's kind of cool, to be honest with you, that you've had two experiences, and then your father and grandfather have had those. Do you ever think that to yourself? Like, I can't believe not only have I had two experiences, but pretty much every male in my family, for the most part, I don't know if you have other brothers, but has had the same experience. That's got to be weird, doesn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, well, after my first sighting, he didn't believe me, but he believes me now.
Of course, of course.
Exists.
What about the other people in your family? Do you guys have a hard time selling it, or is it because you've all seen it, it's kind of known?
We discussed it the other day. My sister thinks me and my dad are crazy, and she said, don't tell my son any of these stories. I don't want him to be scared of the woods. And
sure.
My mom is kind of iffy. So,
but what does this do to you? So psychologically, you know, you're 12 years old, right? You're doing your thing. How much longer did it take for you to get back out in the woods? Did you sleep in your own tent anymore, or were you kind of tented up with dad or grandpa? Or?
At the time, I didn't associate it with Bigfoot. It was only until recently when I started listening to the stories and hearing the sounds that on recordings and stuff that they make that I associated it with that one with Bigfoot. But it has stuck in my mind all these years because it was so unusual that it shouldn't be there. Whatever it was, shouldn't have been there.
So now you heard the rock clacking right outside your tent, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another thing I didn't know they did until I listened to the show.
Yeah.
Shows.
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that because a lot of people will, yeah, I've contacted, actually talked to quite a few people who, you know, didn't want to come on an interview, but they would say, you know, I had this experience when I was younger, and I think listening to all this, this could have been that. I've never talked to anybody who has heard the rock clacking, and that's interesting because I know, obviously, that's a behavior with great apes. You know, they'll do that for communication purposes and that sort of thing. Can you tell me, did you hear when the rock clacks were happening? Did you hear any response or anything like that, or was it just kind of like a sole event?
It was a single event. It had a rhythm to it. It did it sets of three. One, click, 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 and it would stop for a few seconds, then click, click, click. Did it like three or four times.
Okay. And the reason I asked that question is, like, you know, you kind of like go through the different possibilities, right? So you say, okay, was it a bear that was turning over rocks to find, you know, bugs or mice or something that they will tend to do? But it sounds like this was kind of, like you said, it was in a cadence.
It was a deliberate sound.
Interesting. And now did you guys, well, you didn't remember, you didn't think it was a Bigfoot at the time, so you didn't notice any prints, but you said there was snow around, and you didn't notice any anything.
No snow. No snow.
Oh, okay. I thought you said
hard,
that.
Hard ground.
Okay. And
no, I knew that was a Bigfoot that crossed in front of me when I saw it walk across the back of the tent.
Gotcha. Okay.
It was no bear, and it was no person.
Okay. But it took a little time for you to put two and two together on that, since you, and I'm trying to put, and I may be getting the two mixed up, and I apologize to people out there for that, and I apologize to you, Bobby, but you didn't put two and two together with the first sighting, or didn't put two and two together with the second sighting until later?
Second sighting. The first sighting, I knew what it was as soon as it walked behind my tent. I just didn't know the sounds that they made, those sounds and stuff. But the second one was the chattering, like the Tasmanian devil. That one, I didn't know they did. It just stuck in my mind because it was so odd.
Right,
that it
hadn't right.
been there.
Yeah, no, I can only imagine. I mean, I think I would run away post-haste if I had the first experience. But if I'm in those manzanita bushes, then, man, you know, I know what that can be like, and you can't really see through them, but you hear that chatter or that strange talk that you've never heard before. I can imagine that that your hair stood on end. What does that do to you afterwards? I mean, these two experiences, like, how do you feel now? Do you walk through life and you look at things a lot differently than you used to? Was there any kind of post-traumatic stress? I mean, walk us through that, because that's interesting to me.
Yeah, there is post-traumatic stress. I won't hunt, look, after my last experience, I won't hunt in the woods alone anymore. I won't sit on a tree stand anymore. I don't actually hunt. I'll go up there and I'll take pictures, but I won't get out and go in the woods and walk down. I don't do any of that anymore. It's history.
Really? I've heard that a lot from people who've had sightings as well, that they won't go out into the woods. I'll tell you, you know, I've not had a Sasquatch sighting. I don't like to go into the woods to hunt when it's dark, so I won't go early morning, but I'll go in the evening, and once it's dark, I can leave, like I know what's going on. So I can only imagine after having that sighting and then trying to convince yourself that, okay, I'm going to go sit in the stand or I'm going to go do this. I'm not sure that I would have either. But in the first sighting, can you guesstimate the size of the thing that you saw based on the legs and that sort of thing? Or?
I saw from chest down, so I'd say probably maybe 7 feet.
Wow.
It couldn't be all that big.
And could you hear the footsteps heavy? Were they heavy or kind of shuffling? Or?
No, they were heavy. They were hitting heavy. That's how I heard it coming off the hill or the road coming down the hill. A big stomp. And you can hear the gravel crushing underneath its feet.
What was at the top of that hill? Was there a road that it was coming down, or was it just a hill with acres behind it?
It started up a steep hill, but there was a winding road that went up it. It, you know, S-curved back and forth to get up this hill. So I'm not sure if it came off the actual mountain or if it was walking down the road.
Now, I have one more question. Well, a lot of questions, but as I've noticed and I've heard on other programs, and I've talked to other people too, that if you stay in one spot long enough, the interaction will get progressively worse and more aggressive. Did you guys stay another night, or was it that night and then you took off?
We took off the next morning. It was already planned to leave the next morning, so it was not because of what
and
I
how
long, heard
yeah.
saw.
How long had you been there prior to that? Was it a couple days before that? Or?
I think about 3 days.
Okay, that's interesting to me. The reason I say that is I wonder if it had known that you were there, and now, okay, it's time to make your presence known. The theory behind that is, I don't know if I've spoke to Sarah Brown. I did a few shows ago. She was on, and, you know, her theory was that we kind of get in the way of their routines. They don't seek us out. So maybe that's an area that this thing went to get water or do whatever it does, and you just happen to be there, and finally it just decided it's going to go do what it needs to do, whether or not you're there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I could assume that for the first one.
Yep.
But not for the other ones.
What do you think the other? And again, I just have all these questions, so bear with me. But what do you think the other one was doing when you were hunting? Do you think it was hunting you? I'm not joking here, but I just wonder, what do you think it was doing at that time
I think I probably woke it up because it's towards the top of the hill, and supposedly they go up high to sleep or to get out of the area of humans. And I think I woke it up walking down the hill, and I think it was upset and it was letting me know that. That's what
I can only imagine. Now, how did you break contact with this thing? Did it back away? Did you back away? Was there a time where you knew it was there and you guys were sitting there for a few minutes? Or
no, when I was walking, I heard it. I heard the chattering start, and I just turned around and I stood there and watched by, you know, by the sound where it is in the manzanita, and it just finally went out of range. Never did see it. Just heard it. I didn't hear it walking through there either. I just heard it talking as it went along.
Yeah, I always got to wonder. I mean, these things are so stealthy. They know how to move quietly, and I'll bet on more than one occasion people have walked past one, and it's just sitting there observing them. I mean, they can be still for minutes. They have nothing else to do, right? They can just sit there and watch you. I have no doubt about that. But, okay, then another question comes up is when you were hunting this the second time, were you with your father and your grandfather at this time, or were you by yourself, or?
No, there was a whole group of us. Okay. They weren't in visual range because we spread out to walk down this hill.
And this,
so, I don't remember.
This was the one where you were pushing the deer?
Yeah.
Okay. So after all of this, this is compelling to me. Thanks, by the way, for coming on. After all of this has happened, you got a lot of years to think about this, and you know, you probably put, there's been questions in your head, whether it's I wish I would have done this, or some of the questions that have gone through your head about, you know, what did I experience, and I wonder X, Y, Z. Is there anything that's come out of that? And the answer might be no, but is there anything that you wish you would have done or wish you would have known that you know now in order to handle the experience differently or enhance the experience or however you want to put it?
Yeah, I would have liked to have known the sounds and things to watch for in the woods that I didn't know at the time that I do know now, because I've seen some of the things out there in the field.
Okay.
So I would have liked to have known that, and I could have watched, because there was a lot of stuff that I've seen out there that there's no rhyme or reason that it should be there that I've seen.
Now, is that as far as structures or signs, or are you talking sounds and that sort of thing?
Sounds and signs. I have seen one structure. It was also right near where I heard the chatter.
Okay.
Me and a friend of mine were walking up the hill, and I came across a fort in the middle of nowhere before you go up. When you go up this hill, there was like a meadow type thing, and there were several major trails, deer trails coming in there. And this tree is probably 8-10 inches around, had been snapped off about 2 feet up off the ground. Now, I can't remember if it was still attached to the stump or laid back on the stump, but the top of the tree was sitting on a boulder that was probably 10 feet away. All the branches were stripped off on the top and one side, and it had taken large chunks of bark and sticks and broke them to fit to lean up against the log. And there was an opening at one end and an opening at the other end. It had left the branches on the other side of the tree, and it was right by where all these game trails. So I couldn't figure out why somebody made a fort there, but after,
now,
you know, seeing that they made shelters, I assumed this is a shelter, but it was, I could not see it being in there for cover to get out of the weather. I think it was there as an ambush shelter because of the trails that came in right there.
Okay, I see what you're saying. So the game trails crossed, they intersected in that area?
Yeah, right. There were like 4 big game trails that came to that meadow right there, right at that end where this thing was built.
All right, I'm going to play devil's advocate here and ask a question about the structure. Now, the rock itself, the boulder, how far away from the stump was it?
Probably about 10 feet.
Okay. And the reason I ask that question is it possible the boulder could have rolled down off of something, hit the tree broke and fell over? Do you see what I'm getting at?
Oh.
Like, if,
yeah,
so
no.
You don't,
no.
Okay. I just want to put that out there because I don't want to not that I don't want to accept. I just want to make sure that we're kind of covering our bases here.
This was deliberate.
Okay.
This log was laid across there. The branches were stripped off the top, and they were stripped off the side and underneath. And these branches and large chunks of, or not branches, sticks and little, you know, limbs that were old had been busted off, and they were made to fit to go along the edge of the log to make this fort for this structure, but it was only like 2 feet off the ground, so it had to crawl in either one end or the other because both ends were open where the branches, on the other side of the tree, the branches were still there.
Yeah, so you're lucky that that wasn't occupied when you guys stumbled across it, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Might be a whole different story. We might not be doing this interview right now.
Yeah, that's another one of the odd things that stuck my mind. Why would somebody build this up here? Because there was still at the time there was no I thinking Bigfoot did this.
Yeah, I don't. You know what's funny is I'm on board with you. I think that they definitely build structures. You know, other monkeys or great apes will do that to whatever degree, and I'm not a primatologist, but I do know a couple of things. But what's really – let me ask your question on this and get your opinion, because you've seen these things. You've heard them. You've seen the silhouette of the one in your tent, across your tent. What is your take on these structures? I know you saw what you saw, and there's, you know, a good possibility that that's what it was, because obviously a hunter wouldn't have done that. You would have seen chop marks from an axe, right, or something, if it was trying to, you know, build something like that. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you believe that tree breaks pointing in a certain direction do anything, and do they signify things, and if so, why? I mean, the floor is yours. I would like to get your take on that.
Well, some of the other things up there I've seen are X's, lots and lots of X's.
Okay.
The only thing I could think they are is saying either this is the end of my boundary, don't cross it, or this is our trail. This is
right.
The direction we take to do this. That's the only thing I think that, like, X's would be for. And then I've seen tree twists or limb twists, where they take it and they twist it and it snapped, but it's not broke off. It's just twisted off. I've seen those along trails, and I think that's just to get the limb out of their way.
There's no, you make a good point. I've seen some pretty interesting things. I went out with some folks. If I could just kind of share kind of from my experience, and again, not having seen these things, I've seen interesting things in the woods. I've seen probably 6 feet up a break occur on a tree that's maybe 3 or 4 inches in diameter around, but it's twisted. It's not pulled straight down, because I know sometimes porcupine or like small bear will climb up a tree and then the thing will sway down and pull them down slowly and then it'll break. But I've never seen anything twisted that I can explain before. And do you know what I mean? Do you think that that's possibly a sign as well, or am I completely out to lunch and I'm just looking for something in the woods?
No, I think the twists are mean something. I don't know what they would mean, but I think they do mean something.
Yeah,
there's no really reason why to do it other than saying, hey, this is my territory or my spot, stay away, this is claimed.
Now, in both of your instances where you had an experience, did you feel threatened at all? You know, people get that feeling where kind of the hair goes up in the back of their neck. Or was it more that you were scared because you didn't know what you were up against?
The first time I was scared because I didn't know what it was until it crossed in front of my tent, and then I was terrified. Second one, I was scared, but it was kind of the same reason. I didn't know what it was, and I wasn't relating it to Bigfoot because I didn't think Bigfoot were there. The only thing I had to worry about in my mind was a bear, and I knew it wasn't a bear, and I knew it wasn't a person. So it was just kind of scary that way, not knowing what it was.
And so it was one of these things, if I can, and what's interesting about your experience is it doesn't sound like and maybe this is because it wasn't a full frontal assault on you where you see the thing standing there, you know, 10 feet away and it's all of 9 feet and it's hulking over you. It doesn't sound like
one of those.
What's that?
I said, I'll be getting one of those soon.
Oh, okay. Oh, in this, you mean as far as this interview?
Oh, yeah, I've had two more sightings. One was actually face-to-face, and one I was in a tree stand.
Okay, so. Well, let's talk about that. So, ladies and gentlemen of the listening audience, this is something that I love this when this happens, and this is, Bobby, this has happened to me before. When I think I know the story going into the interview, and I know it was a couple of sightings, but then somebody will say to me, and Sarah did this the same thing. She said, oh, I've seen one. And I paused for a second, and I said, well, do tell. So by all means, let me take a step back, continue with your sightings, and we'll go from there.
Yeah. My third experience, I'll just do it really short because it's not really anything that important. It was walking, also doing one of the drives down the hill. I came into a clearing, clear cut where they had taken the trees out, walked about 50 yards, 60 yards down it, and something behind me, and the manzanita growled, and it was one of those loud, low, very low-pitched where it vibrates your body growl, and I flipped around, and there was nothing there. And about the same time, I seen my uncle over in another clearing, so I just walked into the middle of this. Instead of walking along the edge of the trees, I walked out in the middle of the field and just continued on down. I was listening to the sounds of the other recordings. It wasn't a bear. It was, I'm sure, a Bigfoot growling, saying, "Hey, I'm here." But so that one was not really big, but my fourth and fifth experiences were kind of really bad for me. The fourth one, I was we were up deer hunting again. This would have been August of 81. And me, my uncle, and my brother-in-law had already been up there 2 weeks, and we came back for three more days about a week later. And we took ATVs with us, and I had found this water hole with the tree stand on it that was old, really old. So I decided, you know, I'm going to go sit on it for these 3 days. I went out there the first day. All I got was does and fawns to come in and took pictures of them. Mm-hmm. Second day, I ran into a buck brush and ran a thorn through my knuckle. And as soon as I got up in the tree to try to cut it out, it stuck down into my knuckle, and I had to go to the hospital to get it cut out. And the third day I went back up there. I parked my ATVs down the road about 100 yards. The way the tree stand was, it set right up against the road, and it was probably 12 feet off the ground. It was situated inside of four trees. It was a pretty good size, like a 4 foot round platform that was up there. So I got off my ATV, I walked to the stand, I decided, you know, I'm going to be sitting there. It was like around 3:30 in the afternoon. So I needed to go to the bathroom, so I walked behind the stand about 30-35 yards in and do my business. There are no deer going to be coming from that way because it was a steep drop off down to a lake a few thousand feet below.
Oh.
And so I got up my tree stand. As soon as I sat down, T-Rex right behind me. It vibrated. I mean, as soon as I was sitting down after getting in my tree stand, it did this. I froze. There was, I mean, chills went up my spine. I couldn't do anything. And I slowly start turning around to look behind me, and I could see nothing because of the limbs on my tree. All I could see was part of the road behind me. So I'm freaking out. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? Whatever it is, you know, I'm thinking bear is what I'm thinking. It's got me treed. It's going to come up here. It's going to eat me. So anyways, about 15, 20 minutes go by, and it does it again. But this time it's not behind me. It's coming from my left. I'm right in front of my tree stand is a clear cut, and I'm in one corner of it. And this is coming from the opposite corner at the other end of the clear cut. It had roared again, just like that. And so I couldn't see anything. So I'm sitting there waiting what to do, and I'm watching it. And out of the corner of my eyes, I get a glimpse. I didn't see it. I just saw a glimpse of something black stepping off the road into the brush to go to that other noise. So I waited about 1 hour. There was no other noise. I got down, got to my ATV, and booked it out of there. I didn't look in the woods. I just ran
sure.
to my ATV. And then listening to the stories of the other people, the roars, because this wasn't a bear. It was a T-Rex on steroids. I mean, it was so loud and vibrating and low. It just shook my whole body.
Now, how many stories? This is great. And I'm going to go off on a tangent. We'll get back to it. You know, there's a purpose of method to my madness here. But how many stories have you heard, and you've experienced this, during or immediately after some guy goes out into the woods and relieves himself, they hear this giant roar? It happened to Todd Neese. It happened to you.
Yeah.
I've read
yeah, that's the only other person I've heard of, this, Todd Neese.
Well,
he got his right away. I got mine as soon as I got up into my tree stand, which is a minute later.
I have a theory about this, and you're listening to this, but the folks that are out there listening, you know, email me if I'm full of it here and I'm just kind of going down the wrong road. I just wonder if they see you urinating or they smell the scent of what they consider you're marking a territory, that gets them fired up. Do you see what I mean? Like it could be the scent. If they see you doing it at the same time, because the similarities are just eerie. There's a lot of, now I know I hunt too. I just take a leak in the woods like all the time. It's kind of what we do. But it's just, it's really interesting to me. And then the other question I have is when you saw the thing for a second, like walk away off into the trees or the brush, and I'm not leading you here, but I'm just asking what if one or two things it could have been. Could you have caught the tail leg of a bear, or did it look like a trailing foot, like somebody walking?
It looked like something standing up, just stepping off into the woods. But like I said, it was a peripheral vision of something black, tall black, stepping in the woods. When I looked, there was nothing there.
Now, all of these sightings...
This was after the second growl. So this was whatever was probably behind me, going to meet his buddy that had already growled.
So you think there could have been two?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was two of them. Because the second... This one didn't cross my peripheral vision until after the other one had growled already.
Yeah, if I were you, I wouldn't go in the woods again either. I mean, you've had four sightings, man. That's crazy. But
The next one is face to face.
Okay. All right. This is the one
we've
all been waiting for. I'm sitting down. I'm putting my feet up, and I'm just going to enjoy. And I promise you, I won't interrupt too much. I'll try not to. Go ahead.
Okay. This next one, we were road hunting. Me and my sister were in the back of the truck. My dad was driving, and I don't remember who else was the passenger. This was 1 mile from, approximately 1 mile from that tree stand. This was the next year, so it was 1982 in August. I was looking down the hill to where this lake area was. It was a pretty steep angle. It was like 45 degrees, and on her side, there was like a six-foot bank up to Manzanita, and we were cruising along. And I don't know what possessed me, but I looked over on her side, and there's this spring coming up out of the ground. There's no running water up there, except for springs coming up out of the ground. It's not snow melt.
Sure.
There was a spring. It was like somebody had turned on a water hose and was holding it there. It was shooting up probably 8-10 inches, and it was about the same thickness around as water hose water would be. It was coming straight up. It was going onto the ground, but it was set back about two, three feet off the bank where they had made the road cut. But it wasn't running off, so it was going directly back into the ground as it came up.
So it was like a small geyser.
Yeah. So okay. we kept driving, and when you're driving the back of the truck, these are kind of logging roads, and some of them are kind of a one-lane thing, and the trees hang over the road. So... there was a big section of thick trees that were coming up, tall trees that were hanging over the road, so I had to look in order to either move out of the way or put my arm up so I didn't get swiped. And what I was looking at down below was just, you know, sporadic trees and manzanita. And anyway, as we got up close, I turned to look at the trees, and about 10 feet off the road, when I looked back, there was a, before the large tree, there was a section of small trees that were probably 15 feet high. And when I looked back to look down the hill, my eyes caught direct contact with about a 10-foot Bigfoot standing there. He was black. He looked just like a gorilla. He had the top of the tree pulled over, and he was standing behind the tree looking at me like he was in shock, like, oh my God, he saw me, or something like that. There was no expression of fear or, I mean, anger or anything. His eyes were wide open, and there was a branch that came across his lips, so I couldn't see his lips. I could just see from his lips where his lips would be above, and I could see his left shoulder on the outside of the tree. And I caught his eyes for a couple seconds, looked away down the hill, and I looked back, and it was gone, and that tree was flipping back and forth. But between it and the next tree, I had originally thought it was a baby that had jumped off of it. But then listening to the show, I found out that they go on all fours, because this thing was went from an upright position to all fours. I saw it on the ground between the two trees. It was black. I could see its front from it, like its elbow up, and from like its knee. And it was black, but it had a silver back. And I have never heard anybody else say that they saw one with a silver back. It was just exactly like a gorilla.
Okay, so let me thank you for that. I appreciate that. And I know the listeners do too, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here, okay, because it's kind of my job and it's kind of what people expect. And if I don't do it, they call me on it. So here we go. And it's, again, I believe you, and I want you to kind of put some things to rest about this specific sighting. So is it possible, or could it be possible, that this was a black bear and it was reaching up, because bears will do this, to pull down a tree to get something, and what you saw was a cub? And again, I'm not trying to insult your intelligence at all, but what I'm saying to you is, you know, that isn't a possibility in what you saw.
No, that was not a possibility. This was Bigfoot standing there with his, had pulled the top of the tree over, I guess, to see who or what was coming down the road, and surprised it, and it went down on the fours to get away. There's no bears that are 10 feet tall that could stick its head up on this tree.
No, I get that. Black bears, which are what would be out
yeah.
there, if they were...
Yeah, I shot a black bear before when I was 13. This was no bear.
Gotcha. But again, I asked that question because I know people want that answered. And, you know, you'll see in the chat room during the show, there'll be plenty of questions on that. So you've had, and I mean, legitimate multiple encounters. You know, and I'll be honest with this, too, and I'm just curious because people are going to ask the same thing is, why you? Like, why do you think you've had so many of these encounters? You had to have asked yourself that question. And is it just a lingering question that's unanswered, or have you come to some sort of conclusion about it?
Yeah, that's been over my mind several times. The only thing I could think of is that we've been up there since I was a baby till now, and we're up there for 2 to 3 weeks at a time
okay.
in August. And I think there is a family or two that are in that area, and I think they do watch us, and I think they are familiar with us.
Do you think they watch us? Other people as well that just kind of keeping an eye on everyone, or do you think it's specifically you guys? And again, I'm not being condescending or anything. I'm just trying to get inside what you think.
I personally think it's just us because, like I said, the locals in that area don't hunt there because you either in California now you have to either declare archery or rifle. You can't do both.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. That stinks.
Yeah. So you have to do one or the other, and my family chooses archery. And it's in August, and 2 months later is rifle season, and by then it's cold and the deer are moving out of that zone into other zones. So we're the only ones that hunt that little tiny zone in archery season.
And it sounds like you guys then might be hunting in the same place.
Yes, I think they're hunting in the same place as
yeah.
we are at that time. And I personally think they've seen us up there many, many times and are familiar with us.
So you don't get hassled like somebody who might not have been there before and they say, who the hell is this? And they're afraid that you're going to take all the deer instead of the one or two that you get on that trip.
Yeah, something like that. But I do think they're familiar with our faces.
And how do you... And what is this, the radius that you see in this in again, if you had to put one, the sightings, you know, the proximity of each one?
Ask that question again.
That's okay, yeah. So if you were plotting on a map just an area of where these sightings were, are they grouped together within a few miles? I think you said 150 miles. Oh, they are, okay.
Yeah, the first one was 150 miles from where all these other ones are within probably 5-6 miles of each other.
Interesting. And they were all
and
within
some of them are grouped right together within a mile.
And you said from 1970, was it 76 through
76
when?
76 to 1982.
And you've not been there since then?
I've been there, but not hunting. Like I said, I lived in, before, I lived in Kansas for 13 years, so I didn't hunt during, like, the 80s through the 90s. I went in the late 90s, and I went and up there, but I didn't hunt. I was with camera only.
I'm curious, would you be willing to send me, I don't know how familiar you are with, like, Google Maps and that sort of thing, would you be willing to email the area and just kind of mark as to where that is? And the reason I say
that
is...
Already marked on Google Earth.
Oh, okay.
If you tell me how to get it to you, I can get it to you.
Absolutely, my man. That'd be great because I know you've heard on the show Carl, who is working on different hotspots around, you know, different states and that sort of thing. It would be great to have this, because you had these sightings, and you've had them in specific years, specific hunting trips, but they're clustered. And it would be really interesting to see a couple of things. It would be interesting to see, okay, it's this time of year. You know this is when the deer are running through this area. You know you've had this, you've had these sightings. So it's not unreasonable to believe that the Sasquatch might be in that area hunting as well. You've seen the structures. But also, you know, water sources. You saw the well coming up the spring, which, by the way, for folks who are not familiar with some of the terrain in California, that is absolutely the case. Geologically, these things happen, and when the wells spring up, they don't necessarily come up at such a high temperature, and they're great fresh drinking water. So I can tell you he's spot on with that. But the other thing is just kind of, geographically, is this a travel corridor? You know, is it surrounded by mountainous areas where this is more of a valley to go back and forth? It's conjecture, but it's always kind of fun to think about, geez, you know, what is it about this area, not only that made Bobby have these sightings, but why would they be in that area? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I know there's lots of stuff to eat. There's deer. There's antelope. They just started introducing elk up in there.
Okay.
There's coyotes, badgers, they've got manzanita berries, they've got gooseberries, lots of stuff for them to eat. People.
yeah, I know, right? You just, when we were hypothesizing, we were talking about, you know, a couple of things, and there was this area in Virginia where the sightings of people who had seen Sasquatch and people who had gone missing tended to be around early to middle of the winter. And we thought, geez, you know, all the deer are gone. Vegetation goes away. You know, are people kind of, it's an opportunistic feeding because they happen to be there at the right time? Again, this is all conjecture, but it's kind of fun to think about what the different possibilities are. So altogether, these sightings are amazing. Have you documented these at all or thought about doing
that? I've got it written down on paper.
Listen, man, it would be great if, you know, if you wouldn't mind doing it. If you wanted to send those to me, I just launched BigfootGroundZero.com.
Yeah, I can post it in your file.
Yeah, there's going to be a blog site coming up. It's kind of it's in the works right now. I've got a audio and video feed for updates. I'm putting all the interviews there, so yours will be there post-interview here. But yeah, I'd love to get that information. I would post it on the website and on the Facebook page. And, you know, if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, they could go through me and I'd have them connect with you. I don't want to get that information, that personal stuff out over the air.
Yeah, if somebody wanted to go out there and check out the area in August, I'd be glad to point it out to them.
Yeah, that'd be great. And you know what? Here's the other thing. If you're listening out there, what we want to do at Bigfoot Ground Zero, and Bobby, I'm going to take this opportunity to plug if you don't mind. But what we would like to do is reach out to folks who have had experience in certain places and call us up for an interview and let's talk about the hot spots. And then maybe what we can do as a group is go out in different areas and actually squatch, for lack of a better term, and we can post findings. And the idea here is to kind of build a community to where we have one repository for data exchange. And I know a lot of groups are doing it, and that's great, but I want to do this too, because at the end of the day, we're here to learn. And I'll post more of this on BigfootGroundZero.com, but would you be up for that, Bobby? Just kind of, if you ever want to go back, you want to contribute, and whatever that case is?
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent, excellent. All right, so is there anything about these sightings, is there anything you want people to know? Like, for example, if this happens in the woods. What's that?
Don't pee in the woods.
That's right. Oh, good. That's a good time. But is there anything that you would convey to somebody? Like, you're having a beer with them and say, geez, if you ever come across one of these, I wouldn't do XYZ or I would do XYZ.
I would say turn and face it. I didn't like looking in this one's eyes when it looked at me, even though it was total shock. They were all black. It was like emptiness, though. It's like looking into a great white shark's eyes. There's nothing there.
Okay.
But it was like frightening, but I don't suggest looking them in the eyes, maybe for a second if you want to look, but don't look them in the eyes and face them. Don't turn your back on them.
Okay.
That's what I did with all the ones that growled and the chatter. I turned and faced it, and they stopped. Basically, they went to the tree stand when it was. I couldn't on the one that was behind me, but for the one that was in front of me, I was facing it, and it didn't do it. It didn't do it anymore. It didn't show itself, and it either went away or sit there and watch me as I ran away. One of the two.
Now, I know there's a lot of people out there listening right now who are probably going, and I'll be frank with you, this guy's full of crap. But you know why they're saying that is because they're jealous. And I mean, you've eaten up more than one sighting for a lifetime for, you know, 100 people. And I envy you for that. But, yeah, I mean, you seem to be a magnet for that area. So next time you're out there, obviously bring somebody. But, you know, bring a camera. You never know, a GoPro or something like that. You might, you know, catch lightning in a bottle, right?
Yeah, I got one now. I bought it a couple months ago. I'm getting practice on how to use it. But I'd like to actually go up there and film the site where these happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can tell it to go with the story.
You know what? You know what's going on? I know Shannon LeGros over at, and I'm not doing this, I think this is something that would work really well for them, over at Sasquatch Chronicles, Bigfoot Hotspot Radio. They are taking video submissions for little expeditions that people are doing in areas where there's been sightings. And this might be something that you could go out with a camera, point some things out, give the overall lay of the land, and then show the mapping and stuff. And I think that'd be really beneficial to people. And I know they have a really large audience, and I think that would be something you could think about. I definitely would contact Shannon, though, because I think she's rolling out something like that, if she hasn't already.
Yeah, she already did. I saw her posting for it.
Yeah, definitely check that out. All right, my man, I got to end this. We've been taking more than an hour of your time here, and I really appreciate
it.
I know, right? Time flies. But, folks, if you're out there, you're listening, if you wanted to get in touch with Bobby, feel free to do it through BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. It's BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com. You can also hit me up on the website at BigfootGroundZero.com and send me a message there. I will put you in touch with Bobby. Again, Bobby, just for your own privacy and that sort of thing, I'm not going to throw your name out there. And the reason is because my very first interview that I did with people in Lakeville, Massachusetts, I mentioned Lakeville, and there were people that immediately showed up. Yeah, I know, and I think, it's a podcast. It's a, you know, a large world. But one of the people that actually did show up, I'm good friends with now, and he's a fellow watcher, so I'm actually kind of glad about that. But anyway, all right, my man, thanks for the interview. I will, I'll be in touch, and again, if you want to get in contact with Bobby, contact me, and we'll set it up. You have anything else, Bobby? If not, we're out of here.
I guess we're out of here. Thanks for the time.
All right, my man. Take care.
All right, so we've got a long show ahead of us. We still have the segment with Carl and a little bit of commentary for me at the end. I want to just talk about quickly the interview with Bobby. And again, I thought it was a little bit fantastical, to say the least, at first. You know, when he started getting to the multiple sightings, I started thinking, you know, how many sightings are we at now? But the more I thought about it, the more, you know, the guy was sincere, and he knew his details, and I asked him things a few times, not to trip him up, but just because I was curious, and he could go back to those points and then back to where he was in his recollection flawlessly. I think he's telling us the truth. And I think it's really interesting, and we have something here that I don't think we realize what we have. And I've asked Bobby to send me, now he did send me an account. If you go to the Bigfoot Ground Zero fan page on Facebook, you will see he popped into his account some of these sightings. I'm going to actually post those on BigfootGroundZero.com. But we're looking at a potential hotspot, and we're also looking at the potential for a clan or group of Bigfoot, whatever you want to say, who is expecting human contact at particular times of the year. And what is that going to tell us about some of these hunter sightings in the future? Right, so if the Bigfoot clan, or however you want to classify them, knew that Bobby's family or other families were going to be in that area about the same time, they were there hunting as well, maybe it wasn't a big deal. Now, you heard the vocalization at Bobby. Maybe one of these was telling him to back off. And in those manzanita trees, I can tell you it gets pretty thick. It's difficult to see. I mean, so keep those things in mind, because we on this show have talked about the interaction of hunters and Sasquatch. And we've kind of wondered why and how it happens, and it's certain times of the year and that sort of thing. I think this might shed new light onto that. I don't know for sure, and we'll only know as we go forward. But Bobby, again, thank you for your stories. Thank you for letting us know, you know, what happened and where it was, the general area. And if anybody has any questions for Bobby, feel free to hit me up at BigfootGroundZero@gmail.com, and I'll be more than happy to put you in touch. Thanks so much again, Bobby, and look forward to talking to you next time. All right, so we're going to go ahead and get into the interview with Carl. As you know, I have Carl on periodically, well, basically almost every show, because we do a topic that we try to pick that is interesting to you guys, and we know it is because it's interesting to us. And what we'll do is we'll discuss some of the, you know, latest trends in research and that sort of thing. Tonight we're going to talk about the possibility of Sasquatch having sight ability within the infrared spectrum. And we'll break down what that means and what it means in relation to why we can't find them, how game cameras might be working for or against us, and how we might use them to still catch Sasquatch on film. And we get into a lot of things, but I hope you enjoy this segment. It's really a fun time for us, for sure. And we get a lot of emails on these segments just because of the topics we bring up and that sort of thing. So, you know, always feel free to reach out, and we will definitely get back to you. So, anyway, here we go, and take it away, Carl.
Okay, Dave, thanks. I've been doing a lot of thinking about why, you know, everyone talks about how elusive Bigfoot is, the master of hide and seek. And I was wondering, among other things, how and why. And one of the things that I had thought about, it took me a long time to actually get there, was maybe they can see more than we can. And I realized, probably belatedly, that there are very few, if any, non-photoshopped good trail cam or game cam pictures of Sasquatch. And those are usually taken with an infrared strobe, which provides the light that you see for the picture. And then I sort of thought, well, hey, what if Bigfoot can see into at least part of the infrared spectrum? Now, humans can see from about 400 nanometers on the high side to about 720 nanometers on the low side. That's the far end of the red spectrum.
As far as nanometers, break that down for me, because I'm a real
It's like a
guy.
Millionth of a meter.
Okay, gotcha. All right.
With the 400 nanometers being way over on the violet end, the purple end of the spectrum, the high energy end, and then the 720 nanometers being over on the lower energy red end of the spectrum. And on each end of that, you've got the ultraviolet on the higher than 400 nanometers, and then the infrared, which everyone knows about because you know, the military uses infrared to see at night, that sort of thing.
Yep.
What I did a little poking around in research, most trail cams and game cams strobe at somewhere between 820 and about 840 or 850 nanometers, which is on sort of the lowish end of the infrared spectrum, but outside of what humans can normally see.
Can I take a step back real quick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And remember where you are on that. And I apologize again.
It's fine.
It's short. Can you explain to folks what infrared is and what it does? Now, I know the military uses it. But we all talk about, you know, the infrared spectrum, and people kind of understand that. But I'm not sure everybody understands what infrared really is and what it does.
Okay. Infrared is an extension past what we know in the visible spectrum, past the red. And it's more often associated with heat. You hear the infrared pictures are taken of animals at night where they talk about the different colors of the infrared, meaning this part of the animal is warmer than that part of the animal. There'll usually be shades of green or shades of black and white with the infrared, depending on what color they're tuned to, being the hot or the cold. Sometimes the hotter is the lighter color and the colder is the darker color, or the more green it is, the cooler it is. And it's usually associated with the heat given off by a given animal or the background and how the animal stands out from the ambient temperature of the background.
And you use that infrared spectrum, part of the spectrum, to detect that. So that brings
yes.
the heat or the cold back to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it highlights the differences in the heat of the animal versus the background or the animal itself, what the heat signature of it is. And it is very pronounced in the infrared spectrum.
So let me ask you this question, and then I'll let you go to where you were going, and hopefully I didn't derail you. If a Bigfoot is out there in the woods and there's a trail camera there, is it going to see that infrared as a shiny beacon like a diamond that doesn't belong there, or is it going to see a linear beam?
To me, this is just me, this is my theory, if it sees a trail cam taking a picture with an infrared flash, it would be very much like you and I walking down the street past a party in someone's front yard where someone takes a picture with a camera and you can see that flash a block and a half away in the dark.
Okay.
I'm just spitballing this, but to me, if you could see in the low end of the infrared spectrum, a trail cam or a game cam flash or strobe would probably look a lot like that, where you would see this great big flash of light. And
now,
your reaction as an animal would be to avoid that at any cost.
Which is why you see sometimes, and you said this, I'm not going to take credit for this, but you had mentioned that's why you see deer looking straight at the camera, especially when they're 5 or 6 feet away, see it.
Yes.
Okay.
And there's also another theory out there that the deer can actually hear the electronics humming away inside that camera when it flashes. That's why you see the deer is looking right at the camera when it flashes. They can hear this thing warming up, the electronics, warming the strobe up to take a picture. There's also a theory that
even though it happens so quickly.
It happens so fast. But there's a theory that some of these animals can also hear the electronics warming up to take this picture. And it shows up in the sound spectrum.
No, that's great. So then I have another question now. Because knowing how game cameras work, and you've got the infrared beam that when something crosses it, or it's a... it fans out into an area, right? So if something crosses into that, it's going to get the flash. Is that is that spread light, that beam that's kind of, and it doesn't go back and forth, it's more of in a fan pattern, but it's consistent. Is that seen as well, or is only the infrared triggered flash seen?
I don't know. I would guess that it's the big splash of infrared light that probably just goes everywhere.
Okay.
And it shows up as a warning sign.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So nothing comes through, because if they can see it, they're not going there.
Right, exactly. If they can see it, they're going to go around it a long way.
Yeah, and I just, you know, it's funny that you say that too, because I wonder, I'd love to get this code cracked eventually, you know, and I'd love to be sitting back with you or some other people or whatever, kicking back going, we knew that all along, you know. we couldn't prove it, but damn it, we knew it.
Yeah.
That's right. So I just wonder, too, the proximity of these things, some of the reasons why we've not caught one of these creatures on camera, or maybe we have. There's been some lost watches, and I don't want to, you know, say we never will. But
right.
I've read studies. I read hunting magazines, but that's kind of a study.
They do scientific studies, yes.
There you go. But they talk about hunters don't really go as far into the woods as they think they're going when they're chasing deer or when they're going
right.
to their tree stand or whatever. They may
right.
think they're 2, 3, 4 miles in, and in reality they're a quarter mile or a half mile at most, because it seems like a long way because you're walking through all these trees.
Right.
So we're putting trail cams there, but are we not getting them because we're still not venturing out far enough? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I don't remember the specifics, but I heard on another Bigfoot broadcast probably a year ago, another podcast, where they were talking about all these people that have, the question was, what about all the trail cams out there? What about all the game cams out there? They're everywhere. And someone did a scientific study about the actual area that a trail cam or a game cam will actually cover, and then did some math on how many people actually have them deployed. And the actual area they would cover, if they were all put at once, all took a picture at once, it was something like, you know, it's a lot of area, it sounds like, but it was basically an area the size of Manhattan, New York, which, you know, sounds like a lot of ground, but if you're talking about an area the size of the continent of the United States and Alaska, it's like taking a picture of one side of your little toe.
Yeah, well, because once you split up all those pieces to cover all those areas, and
yes.
it's one of those cameras, then they're
yes.
so it's infinitesimal. It's like a thousand angels on one the head of a pin, right? It's
yes.
like really, really tiny. I don't know if that's a
yes.
right analogy, but you get what I'm saying.
No, it is. It is, and it's just like, okay, how many heads of a pin are we taking a picture of out there?
Yeah, it's just crazy, and you got to wonder if Bigfoot has people cams, you know? It's just, I am a 4-year-old at heart. Sorry.
We probably make way enough noise. They don't need people cams. They know we're there anyway.
Yeah, that's that's really a good segue. And we'll get back to the infrared thing. But while I have this on my mind, you're talking about, you mentioned just now them knowing that we're there. It's funny because I've been thinking about, and I talked to a guy, I do some researching up here with a group that chooses to remain anonymous, so I'll respect that. But they were talking about, you know, the whole thing about tree knocking and making noise in the woods and doing these whoops and that sort of thing. And the theory behind it is it doesn't work.
Mm.
And, well, they're onto something, I think, in the sense that you and I are friends, wives, cousins, uncles, brothers, whatever. We're on a clan, and we're sitting around. We're great apes, so we're picking each other's fur and eating ticks and eating whatever, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden you hear a tree knock. You might look up and go, huh, all right, and go back to what you're doing. Or you hear a whoop, and you're just going to maybe stop what you do for a second and go back to what you're doing. It's almost like we might be doing things that are just kind of interrupting what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They mean nothing to them. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just figured I'd throw that in there because
I think the whoops and the tree knocks that we do are, I've thought about this. I don't know exactly what the right word is, but at a minimum, I would use the word disruptive.
Yes. They don't belong.
And
they're out of place.
No. Absolutely not. Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to get your take on that. I know I totally sidetracked, but so as far as infrared goes and the spectrum that we use, I know it's funny because I don't know if this has anything to do with the red eyes. I know I'm all over the place right now, but we had talked about some sightings where people had talked about the reflection of red eyes or the red eye glow or anything like that.
Right.
Would that have anything to do, and not because the word red is in it, I mean, I'm smarter than that, but would that have anything to do with the makeup maybe of the eyeball or the lens or cornea or whatever in relation to... Go ahead.
Most mammals, especially nocturnal mammals, but you can even see this in people, they have certain digital cameras have the red eye reducer for when you're taking pictures of, mom and dad at the Christmas party.
Sure.
A lot of mammals have what's called the tapetum lucidum. And it's basically nothing more than a special layer of reflective tissue back behind the retina of the eye, which reflects back towards the front of the eye in low light conditions, the ambient light that's there. And it basically gives the retina a second chance to see things in the dark. And when you shine the headlights or a flashlight or a camera flash directly onto the eyes of, how many times have we seen this with, your cat, where you take a picture of a cat or a dog or a raccoon or...
And the eyes flash, right?
And the eyes, they have this different, the sort of a glowy flash, this eye shine. That is just the tapetum lucidum. It's this layer at the back of the eye that reflects light. A lot of mammals have it. Some mammals a lot more than others. If you're talking nocturnal mammals that hunt at night, they've got a really good chance of reflecting as much light as possible. People, not so much. If you hit them just right at the Christmas party, and they've had just enough to drink or their eyes are open enough, you're going to get a little red eye there.
Right. So you're talking
about...
most
mammals have it.
Well, that's funny that you say that. Okay, so let's go back to deer, because you mentioned deer, right?
Yes.
So deer have it. You can see the shine in their eyes when the camera goes off, or you catch them in the light, with your spotlighting them, which you're not supposed to do, but some people do. And
I've never done that. Just for the record, I've never done that.
Me either. But they do see in those pale shades of, dark green, yellow, somewhere in between with that. Now, how does that vision, and I don't know if it has anything to do with what you just were talking about, but how does that vision tie in with, again, seeing the, potentially seeing the flash of the infrared or the infrared beam that's searching out movement and that sort of thing?
It might reflect... I don't know for sure. This is just theory. It might reflect any energy that comes into the eye, whether it's visible light as we know it, or if it's infrared light that we think we cannot see, but it might reflect it also in certain of the other animals that can sense infrared light. It might, that layer at the back of the eye might reflect that also. So they would have another chance of seeing that very faint light in the infrared because it's gathered up and reflected back at the retina.
Okay, so now I have a challenge for you. So I'm going to give you $2 million, and you can't run off with it. You have to use it for this.
No, I pay off my mortgage first.
Right, there you go. $2 million in funding, and I said, Carl, okay, first of all, we don't know if these things really exist. We do, but they've not been scientifically proven. Okay, there's that. How would you solve, to the best of your ability, the hypothesis of kind of what people are talking about as far as infrared vision and being able to detect these things? Would it be a matter of just loading up a boatload of game cams in an area and just kind of overwhelming a Sasquatch like a House of Horrors? Or,
yes.
You know, it would be. Okay. Well, we'll speak to that.
What I was actually thinking about this was how I would approach this using scientific method, where we've already got, I've already got an observation. There's a lack of game cam footage that's not Photoshopped of Sasquatch. Next, we go to the hypothesis. My hypothesis is somehow, some way, Sasquatch can see at least part of the infrared spectrum. Now, prediction, next step, is they can see it and they will avoid it. But where is that cutoff? What can they see? And you just hit it on the head when you said just get in an area and just flood it with different wavelengths of infrared and see what happens. If you can have a game cam in the normal game cam frequency range of 820, 830, 840 nanometers, we know that. They'll avoid that like the plague. What about 850? What about 860? What about 880? What about 900 nanometers? Way up on the high end of infrared. What about 1,000 nanometers? Can they see that?
Right. Well, that's what
just, and just get a whole bunch of these game cams tuned to about 10 different frequencies in the IR band and just see what happens.
Well, it's like, yeah, I mean, that's brilliant because I came up with it. And, no, I'm
yes.
kidding. I'm joking about that. But you know what that was? You know what that was? You watch the Three Stooges when Curly says something, everyone goes, hey, that's great. But he can't repeat it. That's right. That's me. Ask me what I said again, and I can't. But that's a great observation, man. I think, you know, there's a lot going on as far as studies go. And, you know, Dr. Meldrum's got the whole, like, blimp in the air and stuff. And I think that technology is so World War One, like, it's so gone. I feel like if guys like that got the funding to do something like that, you can get the funding to just bombard these areas with game cams, and they're all remote nowadays. You can check the. I mean, I've been in a bear camp in Maine where that night they're checking remote cameras to see what's coming in. I mean,
it wouldn't
be that difficult, but
no,
for some reason we're not doing it.
No, and exactly, and that's the part where I. You know, I think about how we can do all this wirelessly, remotely, filters to look in this and do that. And then I wonder, how come we're not? You know, we do this for like you said, bear camps. We do this out on the Serengeti, checking on lion populations and rhino populations. And how come we do all this, you know, really esoteric stuff? How come we don't do this in the woods somewhere looking for Bigfoot? How come we don't do that?
Well, gee, now we're getting into conspiracy territory.
No!
That's my other favorite part. Damn government.
It's a slippery slope from there.
I know, right? You take one step on that, and suddenly you've gone down the wormhole. But, yeah, it's you've got to imagine, and I don't have any insight to this, and I know certainly you don't. We're not, you know, getting anywhere crazy here, but it's not hard to understand that, you know, you can have airborne platforms up there mapping, scanning areas with infrared so quickly, you can do an acre in a split second and have these...
A split second.
Right. And I'm snapping here, folks. If you hear that in the background, I'm sorry. That's not good radio. That's more television. But, it just frustrates me because I know we could be doing these things and getting more. And I still say at the end of the day, you know what's going to happen? This is how Bigfoot's going to be found. Some like 8-year-old little girl is going to walk into the woods and hold one's hand and just kind of walk it out. Like
mm-hmm.
it's her friend and friend it. And then we're going to be like, really? After all, really?
This is how it happened? Really?
Yeah, we can't be happy. We can't be happy with the discovery. We have to be dramatic, you know? So, well, do you have anything else to add, man? I know we're kind of up on it against it as far as time goes. We got the
nope.
So
I have a few other topics I'm working on, but that will be for next time, and it's not infrared.
Are we talking cloaking, but not crazy?
Yes, camouflage and also infrasound. I'm looking at those too. I'm doing some more research.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. So Carl,
one more thing.
Okay. Yep.
the last time I was on, I was talking about here in Virginia, I can do one thing at a time. I was talking about a website that I use a lot for looking here in Virginia, and I gave a slightly wrong name of the website. I'd like to correct that, please, and say I was wrong.
Oh, yes, the gentleman's website. I remember that. Go ahead.
The name of his website is Virginia Bigfoot Research Organization. That's the name of his website. However, his internet address is virginiabigfootresearch.org. I believe when I was on last time, I made it something like virginiabigfootresearchorganization.org, which is not right.
Yeah, and I got 500 emails. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, yikes. Once again, it's virginiabigfootresearch.org.
Okay, so then before we hang up, I've got to ask. Now, we have just launched bigfootgroundzero.com, and not fully functional yet. There's some things on there. I'm posting audio from the shows. We've got video scroll from Facebook as I post things and some other folks post things. You're going to see the scroll go up. So if you need to catch up on things related to Bigfoot, you can go there and check that out. But Carl will be, and I hope it's going to be this week, post up next week, the topics that we go over, he's going to do a quick blog on those, and hopefully we'll be able to get discussions going. But if nothing else, it'll be a further resource for you. So it's what we've talked about. If you didn't catch the whole thing, you don't feel like, you know, listening to the program over again, feel free to go to the blog, and Carl will post there periodically. So
yeah, I will post up some of the articles that I reference, so you can click to them and, you know, do your research and start from there. Yes.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it. We'll talk to you next week, Carl. Thanks so much. And if we don't have anything else, over and out.
Over and out. Thank you. Night, Dave.
Night, buddy.
Okay, thank you for bearing with us the last half hour. I think what you witnessed is two guys in full geek mode, no doubt about it, but it was fun. We like to sit there and talk and just kind of throw some ideas around. Those interviews definitely aren't scripted. We've got a topic we go with, and we kind of see where it takes us. But, you know, I think some of those creative ideas are what's going to get the job done. You know, and if you sit there and you brainstorm, sometimes, you know, they say no idea is a bad idea. You know, I got to tell you, some of the greatest maybe inventions ever have come out of brainstorming and trying the wildest things. So you never know. You know, some of these things, these ideas people come up with, as long as they're innovative, they're not being done by anyone else, then, you know, who knows what happens. All right, so that brings us to the end of our show. I just want to say thank you for listening again. I know you've got things to do, and I appreciate the fact that you're spending time here with the program. If you want to get in touch with us, it's bigfootgroundzero@gmail.com, or you can just go to bigfootgroundzero.com and just drop an email. Either way, it gets to us. We're going to keep building out the content of the webpage. You're going to see blogs shortly, and I'll have the video and audio feed coming up as we get things. So the resource for the website, when you go onto the video and audio feed, it'll become kind of a resource for you. So feel free to use that. Anyway, you've been listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. My name is Dave. Until next time, over and out. I'll always
Mm-hmm.